सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादं शंकरं लोकशंकरं शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीं यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः Chant the first two verses. Of the 15th chapter. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Urdhva Moola Madhashakam Ashvattham Prahuravyayam Chandamsi Yasya Parnani Yastam Veda Saveda Vita Adaschodham Prasrutastasya Shakaha Guna Pravruddha Vishaya Pravalaha Adascha Moolanyanu Santatani Karmanu Bandhini Manushya Loke Urdhvamulam Adashakam Ashvattham Prahuhu Avyayam Prahuhu They say, the sages say, the Smriti Mahabharata also says, the Upanishad, Kathopanishad says, Urdhvam, there is Ashvattham, that there is this tree called Ashvattha, the people tree, which is an imagery for the samsara. So the purpose of this chapter is of course to unfold the knowledge of the self, knowing which one becomes liberated. And therefore, moksha being the goal of every human being, moksha means liberation, freedom. What kind of freedom? Unconditional freedom. You may say moksha means unconditional freedom. Everybody wants freedom. What kind of? We don't want any conditions attached to the freedom. Meaning that I do not want my freedom to be limited to a given time. I want to be free all the time. I do not want the freedom to be limited to a particular place. I want to be free in all the places, under all conditions. So no conditions, no time, no place, no situation, nothing should restrict my freedom. That kind of freedom I want, and that is called moksha. The beautiful and most comforting thing is that, that freedom is my very nature. As long as a person has no idea about that, so long the person is struggling, and that is a samsara. When this fact is not known, meaning this fact is not even known indirectly that what I am seeking is my own self, when that insight comes into life, then it's an excellent thing, you know. Lot of work is already done. When that becomes my insight, understand. Not just repeating that I am Brahman, but then when I get an insight, I'm not even saying knowledge, immediate knowledge, but paroksha jnana, indirect knowledge, that yes, this is what it is. Yes, it makes sense that freedom has to be my nature, because there is love for one's own nature automatically. The fire has love for heat, and therefore the fire doesn't want to be cold. And sun has love for brightness, sun would not want to be dark. And water has love for coolness, would want to remain cool. If you heat the water, then it will struggle to become cool and retain its own nature. And so I do not want to be bound. I do not accept binding, bondage or dependence or helplessness anyway. I cannot accept or tolerate any helplessness, any dependence, any bondage about myself. I always revolt against that. And so that freedom is what I, you know, that is my nature. It makes sense. Because I love the freedom. The simple thing is that you are what you love. You are what you love. We might say, Swamiji, I love many things in the world. I love money and I love name and fame. So many things I love. No, you don't. You love those things not for those things but for yourself. Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. Upanishad says that whatever is dear to us is dear because the self is dear. And therefore, the wealth or anything in that world for that matter, whatever there is dear to me not for its sake but for the sake of myself. Meaning for myself is for my freedom. Anything that promises me to give me freedom becomes an object of my liking because basically I have love for freedom. And anything that appears to be a means of that freedom also becomes secondarily an object of liking. There are like things in the world not for their own sake but for the sake of my freedom. So when I say that I love myself, meaning I love the free self, it is for the sake of the free self or for the sake of the freedom that I love anything. So when this becomes clear to me, then automatically my affection or attachment or other things drop off that we'll talk about. But this is the most important insight that Vedanta gives us, that you are what you are seeking to be, that this unconditional freedom is indeed your nature. Meaning that that has to be known and not something to be acquired. This is that unconditional being an existing fact. It is an existing fact about you, but for whatever reason that fact is not known to you. And not only that fact is that I am free is not known to me, but I take myself to be bound, meaning that I take myself to be contrary to what I am, Why is it so? That's what it is. That is the cause of samsara. The whole creation is only because of the wrong notion about the self. Otherwise the samsara would not be, the creation would not be, the body also would not be, no birth would have been there. It's all there only because of ignorance, which also manifests as this wrong notions about myself, that I am limited. And therefore the wrong notions about the world, that the world is the cause of my freedom or limitation. And therefore wrong notions about God, wrong notions about everything. So that's the cause. And that this is, therefore when it becomes clear that this freedom is not something to be created, it's an existing fact about myself, and somehow that fact is not known, that fact is clouded behind the wrong notions about myself, when that becomes clear to me, then tad vijnanartham, then my life changes from a pursuit of acquiring freedom to a pursuit of knowing the self that is free. Tad vijnanartham sa guru meva migacchati, that comes right over here. Thus, knowledge, therefore, the self-knowledge. Tartishokam atmavit, the Upanishad says that the knower of the self crosses the grief, meaning that the one who knows the self truly as it is becomes free from all the grief and unhappiness, meaning that he becomes established in the freedom of happiness which is his nature. Therefore, Lord Krishna wants to impart that knowledge in this 15th chapter, because that knowledge is the cause of freedom. Knowledge is the means of the goal that I have in my life, the means of true success in my life. Therefore, so imparting that knowledge is the primary purpose of this chapter. But rather than starting with the knowledge, Lord Krishna starts with a description of the samsara. For what reason? For the purpose of vairagya, for the purpose of dispassion. Why is it so? Viraktasya hi samsarat bhagavat tattva jnana adhikarah na anyatha iti na anyaha. Nanyasya. That Shankaracharya very clearly says that the one who is virakta, meaning one who has become free from the passion towards the objects of the world. By passions we mean raga and dvesha, both of these are passions. The attachment and aversion, both of these are passions. That when I look upon something as a cause of my happiness, naturally there is going to be attachment for that. And when I look upon something else as cause of my unhappiness, then there is going to be an aversion for that. It's natural. This attachment and aversion is the kind of relationship I have with everything. Rarely we have a relationship free from attachment and aversion. Even our genuine love also is very often polluted by attachment and aversion. Because even when I love the person, I love the person for a reason. I love the person for a reason. Because the person is a woman or man, because he's good looking at this, because he's whatever, the reasons are there. Because he's my child, because for whatever. So that means it's a conditional love. Same child, had it not been my son, perhaps, you know, my love would not have been what it is now. So my love also is often polluted by these conditions. And so most of my interaction is motivated by these attachments and aversions. But when I realize that the world can neither be the source of happiness nor unhappiness, then the reason for happiness, attachment is not there, aversion is not there. That's called vairagya. The state free from attachment and aversion is called vairagya. Viragasya bhavaha vairagyam. The state of the freedom from attachment and aversion is called vairagya. It's translated as dispassion. Because both raga and dvesha or attachment and aversion, both of these are passions. Meaning, whenever there arises in me either an attachment or aversion, it creates some kind of force within myself. Sometimes I call kama and krodha, where kama means strong attachment and krodha means anger. So when they arise in my mind, there is sort of a force. In avega means as though I am possessed by that. And therefore they are called passions, they control me. And therefore often I am controlled by these attachment aversion. So whenever I act out of attachment aversion, then my free will is not available to me, meaning my viveka or discrimination is not available to me. Therefore, it is important to have a mind which is free from these passions. Then only it's an objective mind. In order for any knowledge, what we need is an objective mind, a mind that does not superimpose. Just as a scientist, when he wants to examine a specimen, he is totally neutral or dispassionate about this. He never loves this nor hates this, he just takes it for what it is, then only any investigation is possible. So, samsarad viraktasya hi bhagavat tattva jnane adhikara, the fitness for the knowledge of the Bhagavan, knowledge of Ishvara, knowledge of God, knowledge of Self, knowledge of Truth. The fitness is only of that person who enjoys vairagya or freedom from these passions. Therefore, before imparting the knowledge of the Self, Lord Krishna discusses rather elaborately the samsara, the life, so that we can understand what is the nature of the life, and so the false attachment that we have can drop off. It is for that purpose that the samsara is described. Urdhvamulam, as we say last time, what is the nature of this tree? Urdhvamulam, which has its roots, urdhvam, or above. What is meant by above? Above is not in a spatial sense, in the sense of space, as much as it is the sense of reality. The root of the samsara is of a higher reality, is of absolute reality. This is a beautiful thing. Even though the samsara of the world is constantly changing, as Bhashyakara says later on, it's like the maya, it's like the dream, etc. We'll talk about that. Even though the life may appear to be a source of unhappiness to us, but the comforting thing is that the root, the very essence of the root of the life is Brahman, is limitless. Even though whatever we encounter is limited, whatever we encounter is changing, and it is a limitedness or changing aspect of the world that really causes unhappiness, or more than that even, the limitedness or the changing aspect of myself is what causes me unhappiness. So even when I come across myself, I find myself a changing entity, a limited entity, an inadequate entity. And that is what causes unhappiness to me. Vedanta says that, no, you are not changing, you are not limited, you are not inadequate. So behind this change in inadequacy and limitedness, there is the limitlessness, urdhvamulam. The mulam, mulam means the root means the cause. Cause means here the very essence, the very self, the very essence of the nature. The nature of whatever is changing is changeless. Who can say this? Changelessness is the nature of, or the true nature of, whatever is changing, meaning that this changing is only an appearance. What is changeless. What it means is that it is the changeless which appears to be changing. Ishavasya Upanishad says, tadeyate tannayate. That means that Brahman, the truth, ejati, it shakes as though, it moves as though, it changes as though. Tanna ejati, at the same time that it is changing, the same time that it is vibrating or it is moving or changing or undergoing modification, at the very same time it does not change. See, these are simultaneous things. Tadejati, tanna ejati. Age component, that it shakes, it moves, it changes, it undergoes change. What? Brahman. At the same time, it does not undergo change. Is it possible that the same entity changes and does not change? Upanishad says, it changes, at the same time, it does not change. Is it possible the same entity can have these two mutually exclusive attributes now? What it means is that one of them must be right, other must be wrong. Or in the Vedanta, Vedantic language, one of them must be satya, truth, other must be mithya, appearance. So as Vedanta explains, what is changeless, what is Brahman? And what is the universe? Brahman appearing as his universe. The changeless appearing as change. What it means is that if you really investigate into any change, you know where you will wind up? You will wind up to changeless. You will find that the change does not sustain. The change ultimately disappears, leaving in its place the changeless. That's the beauty. The many, if you investigate into all this variety and diversity, that diversity and variety ultimately disappears, leaving what? Leaving the unity or oneness there. Therefore, do not take as real what you perceive. What you perceive is changing, constantly undergoing modification. Including your own self. Not, see, the world here, samsara includes myself also, by the way. Samsara, the tree of samsara, not only includes the world around me, but also includes myself. The world is changing, and so also I am also changing. But the wonderful thing is, or the good news, is what? Good news is that what appears, that change is just an appearance. What is changeless. That limitedness is appearance. What is limitless. The inadequacy is an appearance. What is adequate or full or complete or whole. Therefore, let's call the root. Call it the root. Call it the innate self. Call it the essential nature of the tree is what? Urdhvam, urdhvamulam. Although I lift my hand and I say urdhvam because that's what we usually are accustomed to, up, above. But I can as well point out myself, you know, urdhvam. Whichever way you like. Idea is that urdhvam means above. Above in the sense of a nature of higher reality. That the world has a certain reality, a changing reality, a dependent reality. Vedantins call it mithya or unreal. Of that, the essential nature is a higher reality, or that which is real or absolutely real. Sukshmatvad, because it is subtle. What is experienced and that is not experienced in the same way. Brahman is also experienced, by the way. Don't say that Brahman is not experienced. But not experienced in the conventional sense. The world is experienced in a conventional sense, inasmuch as there is a duality of the experiencer and experienced. In that sense, the world is experienced. In that sense, the self also is experienced. Not in that sense, but self also is experienced, because self is consciousness and it is self-revealing in the ever. I am always aware of myself. But we do not call that experience in as much as it does not involve the duality of the experiencer and experienced, but otherwise I am never unaware of myself. But I don't perceive it. The world I perceive with my senses, but then in that sense I cannot perceive the consciousness with my senses. Not that it needs to be perceived either, thank God. If you needed to perceive consciousness, then only you would know it, you would never know it. But you don't need to perceive it in a conventional manner. You don't have to experience it in a traditional manner or conventional manner, because you are of the nature of experience. Sukshmatvat, karanatvat, nityatvat, mahatvat. The universe is an effect. Brahman is a very cause. Universe is anitya, is constantly changing. Brahman is changeless. Universe is also the limited. That one is all pervasive, limitless. Udhulam adashakam. In this, Lord has already said everything, really speaking. This is enough for us to contemplate. Udhulam adashakam. Shaka means branch. Branch is coming down. Not coming down in the sense of the space, coming down in terms of reality. So what is creation? Creation is the absolute reality appearing as a relative reality. Satyam appearing as mithya. One appearing as many. The self appearing as non-self, understand? Ultimately, what is this universe? It's nothing but I manifesting in it ultimately, even though it's a Brahman, but then that ultimately, what is Brahman is myself. The self appearing as the universe. It's a very beautiful thing. Oh no, Swamiji, even I am appearing like this? No, I don't want to appear like that, but you are. But Swamiji, then in the universe there's all the thieves in there, all the criminals. What do you mean I appear? You are, you do. All the thieves and criminals and they and the diversity is all unreal. It's just an appearance. Why do you take it so seriously? We get so stuck up with these things of the world. Oh Swamiji, you see the condition of the world, what is happening here, there. Okay. We are not saying it's not happening, but still, it is not absolutely real, it is an appearance, and therefore don't get stuck there. Even in that miserable appearance also, if you look closely, you will find Brahman smiling. Even in all the crying and weeping, if you closely look, as the Swamiji says, as Ramana Maharshi said, Ahamayam kuto bhavati chinvataha. Aipatatyaham nijavicharanam. When you examine or investigate, where does this I, the hankara, where it arise from? Arises from, so what is the root of ahankara? What is the cause of ahankara? The Brahman, the self. Then the ahankara drops, leaving in its place paramapurna sat. Parama, the limitless, Purna, the complete, Sat, the existence. So our Swami used to say, there appears Lord Shiva with the ashes of ignorance on his body. So Shiva means always cheerful. Shiva means auspicious. Shiva means ananda. So at least remember this. Even when you feel sad, remember this. What is at the core of the sadness is nothing but Shiva or auspiciousness or ananda. You can at least take comfort from that. Swamiji, I don't experience it, doesn't matter. Fake it till you make it. This is called sadhana. These people do not like this fake it till you make it, and you know, because what is Swami faking means all, you know, this is a cheating. Not cheating, pretending. Faking means pretend. Pretend that you are Brahman. Swami, will I not become arrogant? No, you cannot. Because you are. And therefore, you can deny any kind of sadness in you because I am Brahman. Sadness doesn't belong to me, it belongs to the mind, if at all. Doesn't belong to me. Na punyam, na papam, na saukhyam, na dukkham. The happiness, pleasure, pain, all of these things belong to mind. Urdhva mulam. I am urdhva upari vartamanam, the limitless. So what Lord Krishna says is, of this tree of samsara, which includes me also, which is lower in the sense that relative reality, because that of course is very well known, even by this, the scientists have told us that this three-dimensional world is a relative reality. That's how the theory of relativity. This is all I understand about it, nothing more than that, you know. But that's, and that it's root, it's a projection. They say that this world of three dimensions is a projection. Like, I am a three-dimensional entity and my projection on the wall is flat two-dimensional. Similarly also, there is a fourth-dimension entity of which there is a projection which is three-dimensional. So, this relative reality, the root is absolute. Ad-udhumulam adashakam. And so, someday he decided, so kamayata. He says, let me appear as this. Upanishad says, so kamayata bahusyam prajayayati. So kamayata, Ishvara decided a Brahman thought. Bahusyam, may I become many, may appear as many. He did. Why? Well, why not? This why is a big problem, you know. Why, Swami? Why not? After all, it's a play. We take it so seriously, that's a why. When we ask this question, we are extremely serious naturally because of what is happening to us, and this world is responsible for what is happening to me. So why, Swamiji? But for the Vedantins, Vedantins say that this is all a play. It's meant for your enjoyment. When you're watching a movie, the movie is meant for enjoyment. Don't get stuck with it and don't start crying and, you know, I mean, and feeling miserable. It's not meant for that. Misery belongs somewhere else. You are a spectator. But Swami, you can't enjoy a movie unless you become one with it. We go to movie for that purpose, after all, to forget this life, Swami, and so that. Maybe. But the people who are evaluating the nature of movie and acting and music and this, they don't get one with that. Otherwise they cannot. They cannot evaluate objectively. They remain objective spectators. Swami, how can you enjoy? You can enjoy. You can enjoy then the real acting, you know. You will watch how that person acts, how beautiful the acting is, if you don't become one with it. What expressions, what acting, what art, what performance. That's what they will watch. We will become one with that, you see, and then start crying and laughing. So with the universe also, which is like a movie presented before us for our enjoyment, we take it so seriously and become so much one with it and then start crying and laughing that we lose our independent existence. I forget my status that I'm a spectator. And I become one with what I am watching. Urdhumulam adashakam Ashvattham. So it's called Ashvattham. A means no, not. Swas means tomorrow, as I said last time, Ashvattha. Swobi nasthatayati. Swaha, even tomorrow also, it will not be there. It's called Ashvattha. Tomorrow means even next moment it is not there, as they say, because every moment it is changing. Meaning next moment is not the same. To us it may look same because we cannot perceive or we cannot comprehend those very minute changes, but it's changing every moment. Otherwise, oh Swamiji, you have grey hair. They see me after 1 year. So he didn't come overnight. For the whole year it was happening. But then if you see the person every day, you don't see any change at all. When you see the person after 5 years, you see a lot of changes. Because when you see the person every day, you are changing along with that person. You know. Ashvattham Rahu Avyayam. On one hand it's called Ashvattha, meaning that which is, which will not be tomorrow, meaning that it is constantly changing, it is perishable. There's a reason why the samsara is compared to a tree. As we said last night, it is called vrukshaha. Tree is called vrukshaha in Sanskrit. And that word vrukshaha is derived from the root vrascha. The root called vrascha. Vrascha chedane, in terms of cutting, in terms of tearing. So that which can be cut asunder, which can be torn off, that is called vruksha. So even by the use of this word ashvattha or the tree, there is a suggestion here that samsara is that which is subject to being cut asunder. Therefore it is called ashvattha, it is perishable. However, if you take it to be real, what is unreal, if it is taken to be real, then it will never come to an end. And therefore avyayam looks like it is imperishable. From one standpoint, it is perishable. From another standpoint, it is unending, imperishable. Chandamsi yasya paranani. Chandas means the Vedas, the Rug Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda, all these Vedas, the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas are like the leaves. Leaves impart a beauty to the tree. And so also the Vedas, the Karma Kanda, imparts beauty to the tree of samsara. Where is the beauty when there are leaves, when there are flowers, when there are fruits, is it not so? The tree is beautiful when there are leaves, flowers, fruits. So here also, the sense objects are the leaves, and then the action that we perform, the dharma, adharma is the flowers, and the result that we get are the fruits. The tree of samsara has this different element, the samsara has different elements of the tree. A tree has leaves, it has flowers, it has fruits. So samsara, what kind of leaves does it have? So vishayi patravam sasa, the different sense objects of perception are like the various leaves, because they attract us. The sense objects attract us. Attract us means create in us a bhoga buddhi or a desire to enjoy them. We cannot enjoy them unless we acquire them, therefore that motivates me to perform action. So from the leaves come the flower, and from the vishaya, the sense objects, come the action, you see. The sense objects, because they attract me, create in me a desire to enjoy them. And that sense of enjoyment prompts me to perform an action so that I can acquire the desirable objects. So action originates from the sense objects, you can say. You follow what I'm saying? The five sense organs we have, the faculty of hearing, touch, taste, smell, sight. And there are five corresponding objects, except the spurs, the sound and the touch and the taste and smell and color and form. So those objects attract my sense organs. Therefore they are called parana, they are called leaves. The sense objects are called leaves. Because the leaves, you see, if there is a branch, then the leaves grow on the branch. And the sense objects are like that leaves. And they make me perform the actions, which are like the flowers. And the flowers give rise to fruit. So from the actions come the result. Result in terms of the happiness and unhappiness, or result in terms of even this body. This body that we possess right now also is a result of the actions that are performed in the past lives. This tree of samsara is an ongoing thing. So, chandam siyasya paranani. So what do the Vedas do? Vedas give us also the attractive sense objects. Say, hey, there is heaven, give us a beautiful description of heaven. They also give us the variety of rituals or karma by which you can get progeny, you can get wealth, you can get name, fame, heaven, you can get all these things. And so we are attracted by those results and therefore by those rituals when we perform those rituals. And that's how the Vedas keep the samsara going. If you stop performing action, then poor samsara will come to an end. That is why to bring an end to samsara, they say stop performing actions, desire-prompted actions. Whenever I perform a self-centered action, they will definitely bring what result in terms of the karma phala, in terms of the pleasure and pain for me, in terms of the next body. Therefore, Lord Krishna teaches us that even if you perform the action, perform that not with a self-centered motive, perform them selflessly. Perform them as your offering. Perform them as worship to Lord. So action being the same, action can be the same, can be performed either to fulfill my personal agenda, or the same action can also be performed to fulfill the agenda of Lord or Ishvara. Is it not so? It is just a change of attitude. Action remaining the same because we have to go to work, let us say. And we have to do things there. So, or we have to do the household work. We have to do what we need to do. We have to live our life. So actions are there in our life regardless. Just change the attitude. Instead of performing those actions to fulfill a personal agenda or agenda of the ego, what is ego's agenda? Ego's agenda is it wants more and more and more. So stop supporting that ego and making it, fattening it, you know, by providing it what it wants. And perform the action to fulfill the agenda of Ishvara. That's called worship. So that's what we are taught, to become free from the samsara. But otherwise, you know what the Vedas do, the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas place before us very attractive goals, things that can be attained, and this prompts us to perform action. That's how the action, the karma phala, the next body, next birth, all of this cycle continues, and that way the Vedas protect the samsara. Like the leaves also protect the tree, and therefore the leaves keep the tree going by the chlorophyll, by all these actions that go on, by the photosynthesis, etc. Therefore, chandamsi asya parnani. As we said last time, the leaves not only perpetuate the tree, leaves also make the tree look beautiful, and the leaves also hide behind them all the defects, so many holes and other kind of ugliness may be there in the tree. If you look at the tree very closely, some of the branches are broken, some of the branches are twisted, and very closely it doesn't look that beautiful. From a distance, when it's covered by the leaves, then the tree looks beautiful. So these leaves manage to perpetuate the tree, at the same time manage to cover all its blemishes and defects. And so also, these karmakanda, by praising swarga, by praising the different karma and the karma phalas, they as though conceal the blemishes or defects of the samsara. There is minding that they don't tell you. When you perform an action to fulfill your desire, then the desire may be fulfilled. Unfortunately, that fulfilled desire is bound to create a new desire. A desire never gets fulfilled without producing a new desire. Because even when the desire gets fulfilled, you get a certain satisfaction. But either you want more of that satisfaction, or you find that either you find satisfaction is not enough, or if the satisfaction is, you want more of it. And therefore it will again create a desire to perform, repeat that action if it has been satisfactory. So these desires are never-ending thing. One desire may go away, leaving in its place another desire. Like the baton is just given to one to the other. But they never tell you that performing desire production is binding. They never tell you that it is the cause of the next birth and a perpetual existence, limited existence. This kind of blemishes about samsara, they never tell you. In that sense, the leaves are also concealing the defects of the samsara. Chandam syascha paranani yastam veda. So one who knows his tree along the root, saha veda vit. He knows the entire Veda. Se Shankarajara saha sarvajnyo bhavati. He becomes omniscient, becomes all-knowing. You don't become omniscient in the primary sense, you know. It's called arthavada. It is called praising this knowledge. So by saying that, yastam veda sa veda vit. Yaha tam veda. One who knows this tree of samsara, saha veda vit. Now, Vedas are said to be omniscient. Vedas are said to cover all the knowledge. This is our belief, you know. Vedas are a body of knowledge that cover everything. So knowing the Vedas means knowing everything. Meaning that this person who knows the tree along with the root, not just the tree, along with the root. Basically, what we want is give up the tree and focus attention on root. The reason why the tree is described as one having roots above and the branches below, by that we are told that, hey, what you see are just the branches and the you see the tree. So you see the stem and you see the branches. You don't see the real thing. The roots you don't see. So actually the reason why the tree is described so that we can give it up. Meaning that we can turn our attention away from the tree and focus our attention on the root. Because that is the thing to be known. I mean, you know the root of the tree, which is what? Brahman or the Self or God. Then you know what needs to be known. What is necessary to know in our life? Atmanameva vijaniya, therefore one should know, says Tattva Bodha, Satchidananda Swarupam Svatmanam Vijaniyad, one should know oneself as Satchidananda. So it is for that purpose that this tree is described, so as to focus or in order to direct our attention to the root, which is the self. And the tree is further described in the second verse, adaschordham prasrutaha tasya shakaha gunapravruddaha vishayapravalaha adascha mulani anusantatani karmanubandhini manushyaloke. One advantage of this 15th chapter is, I think many of you might know it, meaning that it may be tip of your tongue, or should be, at least one chapter. Not the whole of Bhagavad Gita. This is one of the shortest chapters. This chapter is just 20 verses, and then this 12th chapter, also 20. These two chapters are very famous. And whenever our parents or elders used to teach us Bhagavad Gita, they would always teach 12th and 15th chapters, because they are short. Your satisfaction, I know two chapters of Gita. But at least 15 chapters we should memorize. So not only you can join us at the lunchtime in chanting, so that now we have a little audible voice, otherwise the noise that ensues there in the dining hall, this chanting is, subdued. Because the Swami chants, and then a couple of people chant, and then you can hardly hear that. So if many of you know that, the room will be filled with this sound, chanting. And those who are making a lot of noise also may hear that, and may be motivated, oh, this is wonderful. Something about dining hall, that I think people just become so free. Because having sat here for hour and a quarter here, and then listening, and I'm very restricted, sitting in one place, and you get freedom. As soon as people leave this room, open the door outside, right away, all kinds of, nothing wrong with laughing and and we generally Indians are pretty loud also. So loudly talking. Not realizing that there are some people sitting in the temple meditating sometimes, We don't realize that there are people who are praying here. Or at least Dakshinamurti wants to have some silence. Adasyaudvam prasutaha tasya shakaha tasya samsarvakshasya shakaha. The branches. Now we were told about the branches coming down. Some more details of the branches are given. The root, we are told, Brahman is the root. I suppose the Brahman along with Maya becomes the root, Ajnatam Brahma. Brahman, which is unknown, becomes the root of the samsara. That's a primary root. There are secondary roots. Avantara Mulani. Adventitious roots also. If this is, had it been the banyan tree, of course then you have all these adventitious roots also coming down. But this is people tree. It doesn't have those kind of roots. But then, people, nobody wants in their home in India, this ashwatha, because these roots spread for long distance. And they go underneath your house and start breaking it. So people worship as long as the tree is in another temple or someplace. They don't want this tree in their house, generally. But this tree is very amazing. It spreads by itself. Why ashwatha has been chosen? Or this ficus, all the trees of that particular, the species, the fig trees, that the birds eat those figs. And there from the droppings of the birds, there are the seeds in the fig trees. So then with the droppings, the seeds also spread. And that's how new things come up. And therefore this peepal tree grows anywhere. And particularly in our walls it grows, in India, that all of a sudden these people, it comes out from a wall, from a crack in the wall, you know, from the roof, crack in a roof, it comes out. So people get worried. If it is there, then, you know, it will spread and it will... Now you can't cut it also because it is a religious, auspicious tree. So there is a lot of conflict, you know, with this Kapival tree. Then you perform all kinds of rituals and, you know, you have to seek the pardon. Then something happens in the home and says, you see, you cut the people tree, you know. A lot of superstition also is attached to that. We call it superstition because we don't understand, that's all. Maybe it is true, who knows? But now some more information is given about the branches. The branches that are coming down, among those branches also now, others shows, some branches go downwards, some branches come down, all right, but they go upwards. Some branches go upwards, some branches... Upwards is not above Brahman, but you know, in the relative reality also, there is something that is upwards, something that is downwards, something that is straight. What are these branches? These branches are nothing but our body, the various embodiments, various bodies, they are the branches, and there are countless such species, countless bodies. At least 8.4 million to be sure. 84 lakhs bodies are there. Some of them go down. Yatha karma, yatha shrutam. According to karma and according to whatever kind of meditations you perform or what kind of attitudes you entertain, they determine what your next birth will be. But Swamiji, once you are born a human being, is it not that you will be born as a human being all the time? No, unfortunately there is no guarantee. Yatha karma, yatha shrutam. Yatha karma, the kind of karma or actions you perform, yatha shrutam, and the kind of meditations you perform. Swamiji, I never perform meditation. In the mind you are always meditating, you know, thinking about something. So whatever be the nature of that thinking? What are the quality of our thoughts? That also determines what our next words will be. That's why meditation and prayers are important, so that our thoughts are of a higher quality, good quality. If by through meditation and prayer of Ishvara or you know, our chosen deity becomes the object of a thought, then our thoughts are of a higher quality. On the other hand, a person is all the time thinking about, now I have eaten lunch, what is there in the dinner, and what are we doing on Friday, and what are we doing on the Saturday, and which movie is that, all the time thinking about this stuff. Then next birth will be like that. All your person says, I am going to do this to that fellow and that, you know, and so the person is a violent person. He will be born in a violent yoni. Meaning, there are many violent... All these species below human beings are all violent, and you know, one form or the other. Where in the tigers and the lions, the violence is very high. But everything is everywhere, you know. All beings depend upon others. Even the birds also are very nice to look at, but they also take these, you know, eat insects, and that's their food. There is no vegetarian thing except, I think, the pigeon. That's only bird, that's a vegetarian bird. That's why it is chosen as a bird of peace. And particularly white pigeon, because white also is a, white shows sattva. This is what I think. Adascha urdhvam prasrutaha tasya shakhaha. All these bodies are going above and below and above, below the human, all the way up to a tree, above all the way up to Brahma. Middle, the human beings. Guna pravruddhaha vishaya pravalaha. They are all strengthened, pravruddhaha, by the guna sattva rajas tamas, because this upadhi is made up of these three gunas. The gross body made up of tamas. The subtle body made of sattva and rajas. So, sattva rajas tamas, they form this body-mind complex. Of all living beings, in varying proportions. So proportion of the sattva rajas tamas varies. But all the living beings ultimately are, their embodiment is made up of these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. Guna pravrudha vishaya pravalaha. From these branches there are further shoots. So pravalaha means new shoots that come out. See, if you look at a branch, there is a new shoot from which another branch will come out. So shoots represent potential of another branch. From there another shoot, from there another shoot, like that you go on. So here we are told, vishaya pravalaha. The sense objects, we already talked about it, the sense objects are like the shoots, new shoots. Because the shoot has connection with the tip of the outer surface of the branch, you know, from the branch it comes out. So this body is a branch, let us say. It is called shakha, this body is a branch. And the sense organs are the tip of this body, branch, you know. So just as in a branch, on the tip the shoots come out. Similarly, this branch with this body, the sense organs of perception are like on the surface, you know. And they are always in contact with the sense objects. Because the sense organs have a natural affinity for sense objects. And so, vishaya pravalaha, they in fact are cause for the new shoots. As I said, the sense objects create in us a desire to enjoy them. And because of that, there is an action to acquire them. From that there is a result. From that there is a new body. That's how this shoot gives us a new branch. Another shoot, like that it goes on. So, vishaya pravalaha. Then the second line says, adascha mulani anusantatani karmanubandhini manushyaloke. Then there are the secondary roots. The primary root is Brahman with Maya. Then secondary roots, the spread. Anusantatani. Santatani meaning they have spread out. Are diffused and spread out everywhere. So what are these secondary roots of the tree of samsara? Karmanubandhini. They which give rise to karma. These roots which give rise to karma are followed by karma. Adascha, below. So below means in the manushya loke, in this world of humans. Below means in the world of humans, these secondary roots are all spread out. So, this is interesting here, how the roots spread out. You see, you perceive an object which is attracting you. That object creates in me a desire for enjoyment, let us say. And because of that, there is a desire that I want to have that object and I experience it. So because of the desire, I perform an action to acquire that object. As a result, there is an experience of the object, which may be a pleasant experience or a painful. Meaning that sometimes the things turn out to be what I expected them to be, sometimes they turn out to be quite contrary also. So where I expected enjoyment, it turns out to be pain. You never know. Sometimes things look so pretty from outside. You taste them and it's bitter. The taste is bitter. It looks very pretty outside. Similarly also, some of the things may look very attractive, and when you really experience them, they turn out to be bitter also. And therefore, sometimes they're sweet also, sometimes bitter also. The fruits are of all kinds. So when the fruit is sweet, then you are happy, then you want more of it, therefore again you will perform action. When the fruit is bitter, then you are unhappy and then you want to avoid it. And so that also is another action, avoiding. Because what you don't want, it comes on your way. Then you want to avoid it. That also requires action. What you want goes away from you, generally. What you want stays away from you. So you need to perform action to acquire it. What you don't want is it has an uncanny knack of coming to you, so you perform action to avoid it. These are actions. All our actions can be classified into these two: actions performed to acquire and experience desirable things, and actions performed to avoid and stay away from undesirable things. Because we divide this universe into desirable and undesirable. Why? But that's how our mind works. It cannot work without this. The mind has to categorize desirable and undesirable. Before that it cannot proceed. When I meet you, for example, my mind has to brand you desirable or undesirable. That will decide how I interact with you. If I judge you as desirable, then my behavior will be of one kind. If in my mind I judge you as undesirable, my behavior will be of a different kind. So therefore, the desirable will cause certain kind of actions, undesirable will cause another kind of actions. Both will be called actions anyway. Karma anubandhini. Anubandha means that paschad bhavi, that which happens later. Anubandha. And so, that which invariably produces actions. So these roots, what are the roots? Raga and dvesha. The world or objects create in us attachment or aversion, that we discussed. Whatever I look upon as a source of happiness creates in me an attachment, and whatever I look upon as source of unhappiness creates in me an aversion. And so generally I relate two things with attachment and aversion. Both attachment and aversion produce actions. So it's called karma anubandhini. Attachment and aversion are the roots. So what are the secondary roots? In the form of attachment and aversion. What do? They produce action. What do the actions do? Actions produce experience. What experience? Pleasant and unpleasant. What do? Pleasant experience creates again attachment. Unpleasant experience creates aversion. So experience creates attachment and aversion. The attachment creates a desire, I want to have it. The aversion creates a desire, I don't want to have it. Those desires result into action of having something or avoiding something. Which action gives rise to experience of pleasant or painful? Again raga dvesha, again desire, again action. You understand this? This is called samsara. Samsarati asmin is samsara. That means one keeps on sliding, constantly sleeping, moving. That is how the secondary roots of this tree, they keep on spreading. Because we never stop. We get the new body. And why is this body? To enjoy the world. So if I look upon this world as a field of enjoyment, then that's what I'm going to do. So I'll perform action to acquire things that I consider desirable, and again, experience, action, experience, desire, action, experience, desire. This is how the chain goes on. Adascha mulani anusantatani karmanubandhini manushyaloke. And this is only in manushyaloke, in the human embodiment, because other living beings do not have freedom to perform deliberate actions. See, only a deliberate action will give rise to results, binding results. A non-deliberate action does not give rise to any personal results. So all creatures other than human beings perform actions, all right, but they are not deliberate actions, they are all instinctive actions. They do not have free will, therefore their actions are not binding actions. Whereas a human being performs deliberate actions. Therefore, the actions are binding. And thus, that chain of, that spread of bondage, or the roots of bondage, keep on spreading. Okay. We'll meet you again after a coffee break. Come back here at 11:45. I think half an hour is very long coffee break. You must be getting bored, is it not so? Half an hour is too long. So 20 minutes is good.